In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes, it is time to talk movies. Alan Adams for The Main Edge with us. Pass the Popcorn brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 and the Bangor Drive-In. Hello, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
Doing pretty well, thank you. How'd the weekend go? How's your Monday? All those things?
Pretty good weekend, relatively low-key. Didn't do a whole bunch of stuff. It was nice. Got out, played a round of disc golf on Saturday, which was fun. And, other than that, I've been today just hanging out and doing some work, getting it done. You know what I mean? You know how it is.
I hear. When people talk, you hear things. Well, glad to hear that. And, God, how'd the disc golf game go? Is this your second time out this year?
Third, I think.
Yeah.
It was good. Like I had a good round. I actually went out with our mutual friend Brad LaBrie. We stepped out to the new-ish course up there in Orono. Frankly, wanted to get in a couple more rounds before the hordes descend because. I don't have a good feeling, Rich.
No,
good feeling about any of it.
Share in that. Well, you did get to see three movies that we'll be talking about, including a nice big fat round number for you as a reviewer for Rotten Tomatoes.
That's right. Yeah, it was funny. I didn't really notice it until last week. But I reached a sort of milestone with my offerings on the Rotten Tomatoes website. My third review of this weekend wound up being my 500th. That is on the site. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I figured I'd make a note of it.
Yeah, that's very cool indeed. Well, let's start with a new film from Seth Rogen that sounds pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, it's called An American Pickle, and it's currently available on HBO Max. The American immigrant experience has been subject of some really, I mean, just tremendous art over the years, whether we're talking about books or films or what have you. These wonderful stories that explore what it means for people to come to this country in pursuit of a better life and what happens in the course of that pursuit. However, I feel very confident that never before have we seen a story told through the lens of accidental pickle preservation until now.
Thank goodness.
An American Pickle brings the early 20th century immigrant experience to the present day, basically by dropping it into a pickle barrel for 100 years. It's as absurd as it sounds. It's broad and it's weird, but it's also a lot of fun. And Seth Rogen goes full like Patty Duke, Phoebe, and Ursula. Like he plays two parts in this movie. Simultaneously, which is super fun. He plays a turn of the century immigrant and a modern day Brooklyn app developer, and so we have that sort of fish out of water, you know, odd couple kind of vibe, giving us a chance to sort of take a comedic look at the current world through the eyes of the past. So the basic gist is Herschel Greenbaum, played by Seth Rogen, is a ditch digger in a country in Eastern Europe. He's poor, but finds happiness when he meets the love of his life, Sarah, played by Sarah Snook. They share a dream of a better life, even after this is not a spoiler because it happens within the first couple of minutes of the movie, even after an attack by Cossacks at their wedding leaves their village almost completely destroyed. So they make their way to America in 1919. They live in New York City. And Herschel gets a job at a pickle factory. They're still poor, but they're together until there's an unlikely confluence of events that result in Herschel accidentally falling into a pickle barrel and remaining there for a century. We get to the present day. The barrel's opened again, and he's somehow still alive, perfectly preserved, and has not aged a day because of science. there's actually a really clever bit where Herschel, who's sort of narrating the proceedings, basically narrates over the scientific explanation of what happened to him. So we have this stretch of narration. You know, we have a news conference. Someone asks the question, like, "How do you expect us to believe this is possible?" a scientist goes into a long and detailed explanation, which is completely covered by narration. Narration ends at the same time as the explanation, and everyone in the room is like, oh, yeah, no, that makes total sense. That absolutely is. We have no more questions because you've explained it so well, which I thought was a nice touch. But he only has one living relative, a young man by the name of Ben, also played by Seth Rogen, who's living in Brooklyn, and he's an app developer. He spent the last 5 years trying to launch this app that he thinks will bring him great success. Ben takes Herschel in, but as you might expect, an Eastern European immigrant from the early part of the 20th century has some, we'll call them regressive ideas about society and the world. And so things get pretty complicated pretty quickly. You know, Herschel tries to understand the world that his great-grandson lives in, and also alternately stumbles into success, like huge success and massive failure, sort of back and forth, just by being the dude that he is. And eventually we find the two of them trying to find some sort of common ground to repair the relationship between the two of them that has been fractured by the many stressors of 21st century life. It's a weird movie, Rich. It's kind of an odd couple, like bro comedy, the sort of thing that we've seen from Rogan before. And it's kind of that exploration of the immigrant experience. And it's kind of a sort of juxtaposition of old beliefs versus new ones. And it tries to be all those things. It doesn't quite manage to do any of them. And I don't mean to condemn the film at all. It's actually really fun. I had a really good time watching this movie. But it doesn't quite, its reach just ever so slightly exceeds its grasp. But again, I mean, there's a lot to like. There are a lot of really funny bits, some wonderful commentary on the state of the world today. It's fun to see Rogan stretch himself a little bit. I mean, it's all kind of a variation on what we've seen from him before. But at least there's a little bit more depth to it, especially considering he's playing these two fairly different characters. Like, that's one of the things that that sort of surprised me about it, was the fact that he sort of proved able to kind of give us a nice delineation between these dudes that's more than just, like, an accent and a beard. Like, there's actual, like, difference between the two, which I thought was really fun. And as we've seen in the past, man, like, going full Parrot Trap is hard. Like, it's not an easy thing to do, and so it's really well handled by Rogan. And again, there's some folks in the supporting cast, but it really is very much, I guess you'd call it a two-hander, one-hander. I don't know exactly what you call this, but those two characters are really the driving force behind this. It's pretty funny, it's like I said, like I dug it. I could see how, maybe people want a little bit more from it. But if you go into it with the right attitude, you're definitely going to have a good time.
All right. That's the story on an American pickle. Tell us about I Used to Go Here.
Yeah. So I was interested in this movie for a number of reasons. It's very much an exercise in sort of exploring the toxicity of nostalgia. This tendency to sort of look back on the past with rose-colored glasses when our present isn't living up to expectations. I Used to Go Here is written and directed by, she goes by Chris Ray now. She's formerly Chris Swanberg, ex-wife of Joe Swanberg, the indie filmmaker. It stars Jillian Jacobs, who's probably best known for her work on Community. And it's this funny, like, cringy and occasionally creepy look at how the past is rarely as neat as we remember it to be. And it's also a movie about what it means to fail, whether it's in a job or a relationship or really any endeavor, and to come to terms with that failure. Sort of exploring the complexity that comes with, engaging in a career built around creativity. It's heartfelt. It's smart. It's pretty funny. It does misfire pretty significantly in a couple of places, but I think the pros outweigh the cons. Jacobs plays Kate, a writer living in Chicago. Her first novel has just been released, and it is not going well. The response from the public has been so disinterested that her publisher just straight up cancels the book tour that's been scheduled. Like, so, you know, she's having that struggle. All of her friends, including her best friend, Laura, played by Zoe Chow, who steals a couple of scenes. She's wonderful. They're all starting families. Meanwhile, she's just broken up with her fiance, who doesn't want to talk to her. And it turns out may have already moved on. So she's really struggling with the world as she's currently living in it. And so when the opportunity comes to escape that for a little while, she jumps at it. See, her collegiate mentor was this English professor named David Kirkpatrick, played by Jemaine Clement, one half of Flight of the Conchords, just a delightful actor. And he's sort of like her hero, the reason she became a writer. And he invites her to return to campus to do a reading. And, you know, speak to students and do that sort of thing. So she sees it as a chance to get away from these current struggles. And, you know, and the idea of returning to the old stomping grounds as sort of a quote-unquote success story, you know, kind of, it's a chance to soothe her ego a little bit. She attended University of Illinois at Carbondale, and so that's where a lot of this is set. She finds out she's staying across the street from the house that she and her friends lived in when they were students, and she meets the current residents, which is you know, that's a bunch of, you know, easygoing oddball college kids with names like Animal and Hugo and Tall Brandon, and just generally sort of gets swept up in this nostalgic feeling. And she sticks around for the weekend just to sort of shut out the noise of her life, but she's drawn into the sort of nonsense that can only happen inside a campus bubble, and a good deal of it revolving around a sort of misplaced jealousy regarding her professor's current star pupil, who's a young poet named April, played by Hannah Marks. So she's there reliving the glory days, but she also has to figure out how to deal with the consequences, you know, deserved or not, of the life of her life when she goes back. And as we learn as we progress through this film, the past is a nice place to visit, but it is wildly unhealthy to live there. Yeah, it's a charming movie. It's a shaggy movie. It's a good hang. You know, we all have those feelings of, you know, fond memory of returning to a place that holds so much meaning, you know, but you know, there's also some, you know, some emotion that gets tangled up in there. But Chris Rea, who is clearly a very talented filmmaker, treats it all really with this wonderfully self-aware, sort of gentle touch. The laughs, when they're there, are genuine, and the emotions are generally earned, although the story does get a little bumpy along the way, including a couple of romantic altercations that are... I'm going to go ahead and call them distasteful. A couple of bad choices made by various characters. I found a little unsettling at times. I'll leave it at that. But it does also do a really good job of capturing the sort of easy camaraderie of a certain kind of collegiate social circle. Like, not the partiers, not the bookworms, but the folks who are kind of in the middle, like those friends with the shared interests and ambitions. Feels really honest, both in terms of the you know, the setting and the performances. And I mean, if I'm real about it, like, you know, it's the sort of movie where you're watching and it's like, oh, maybe get a little touch of that nostalgic feeling yourself. Like I said, it's a good hang. The primary reason is the strength of the cast. Jacobs is really good as Kate. It's a very nuanced and fun performance. Clement is great. He is a smug English professor of the type that anyone who attended a college will recognize. Like, we all know that dude, like it or not. And all the actors who play the college kids get great performances. Like, they're all really they're really solid and really wonderful, and it all feels very very real. Again, it's pacing's a little wobbly. The middle third, especially, tends to meander. And I mentioned the aforementioned narrative choices that are unsettling, but for the most part, it's fun. And again, you can't really return to the glory days, and you know, they might not have been all that glorious to begin with.
Ain't that the truth? Finally, let's hear about Waiting for the Barbarians.
Yeah, I didn't know a ton about this movie until I was given the opportunity to check out a screener. But when I got the release, I'm like, man, like, starring Mark Rylance, Johnny Depp is in this movie, Robert Pattinson is in this movie. It's based on Jam Kotze adapted his own 2003 novel, which won the Pulitzer, the same name. And it's like, I'm like, wow, all these pieces. This is obviously going to be a great movie. Rich, it is not a great movie. It's not a bad movie. Like, I don't mean to imply that it's bad, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you just, when you see all the pieces sort of assembled in such a way, you're just like, oh, you know, this historic epic with these, with an Oscar winner leading the way and like a couple of movie stars in there, like this is gonna be great. And it's not. It doesn't quite scale to those heights. The plot is, well, it's interesting. Rylance plays the magistrate, and so that's all. He never gets a name. Like, we never learn his name. He's just the magistrate of this border outpost. He's in charge of this particular section of the line that is to be held against the barbarians wandering the plains that may or may not pose a danger to the unnamed empire. It's obviously an allusion to the British Empire, but they never refer to it directly, and they have their own sort of flags and standards that are very much unique and not of the British Empire. So we've sort of created this sort of alternate, like, it's its own thing, I guess. It's fictionalized. In the course of doing his duty over the years, he's sort of come to realize that things on the border are far different than the people in power perceive them to be. Like, these, you know, these so-called barbarians, they're not savage, they're not warlike, they're just nomads, and they just want to be left alone. Like, they're no threat. And that's, you know, that's his attitude, and things are very peaceful at this outpost, until there's this sort of minor theft in the town leads to the Empire, unfortunately, taking an interest. And that means they send people like Colonel Joel, played by Johnny Depp, to investigate. And the investigation is done, it's really a very sadistic sort of, like, you know, Joel and his men, they use torture and they extract coerced confessions regarding treasonous acts and plots that don't really exist. And so the magistrate finds himself sympathizing with the victims, particularly one young woman whose wounds have left her unable to return to her people. He spends time nursing those wounds, and they build a connection. And all this time, his questions regarding the Empire and its methods are festering. However, his sympathies and his questions soon come back to haunt him when Joel's henchman, Officer Mandel, that's Robert Pattinson, comes to the outpost to clear the way for the colonel's return. And this leads to the magistrate's loyalty coming under fire, and circumstances quickly spiral out of control for him, for the soldiers, and for the people of the outpost in general. One of the things I noted about this movie is it's very apt title, because a lot of the movie's runtime is filled with that sense of anticipation, like you're waiting for something to happen. Unfortunately, the payoff, they're too infrequent, and they're a little underwhelming. Like, it's just, there's something very sedentary to this movie, which, again, is very much in of a keeping with the sort of setting that we're talking about. Makes it a little difficult to engage fully. The pacing is it borders on glacial. Like, it's such a slow moving film, interspersed with these outbursts of, like, brutality. That being said, the movie looks stunning. Like, we're on location, and so we've got these grand isolated plains, you know, surrounding this tiny little town, this little settlement, and so it's just sand for as far as the eye can see. It really lends itself to this feeling of of isolation. It's just this austere and bleak, windblown kind of desert. And it kind of combines that. It's so very large that it makes the people feel very, very small. And I feel like that's indicative of the sort of vibe that that the director sought to capture. Obviously, Mark Rylance is incredible. Like, he's always fantastic. Like, he's and he's as good as ever. Like, he's this very quiet, gentle man who's sort of almost been forced down a path of free thinking by his circumstances, and he just radiates this goodness. And like, I feel like that's one of his best qualities as an actor. He has this ability to just sort of embody a gentle sort of vibe, and it's so and it's just so easy to watch. Like, he's just so comfortable in his own skin that it's just great to experience whatever it is he's doing. Depp, man, you know, I know, like, you know, Johnny Depp has, things have not gone well for Mr. Depp in recent years. I got to say, leaning into villainy might be the right move for him. Like, he really just, like, there's a sinister vibe to him, like from the moment he steps on screen, where you're just like, oh yeah, this is, I'm uncomfortable with this guy. And he really just sort of encapsulates the sort of buttoned up sadism that comes from that sort of character. Pattinson's okay. Like, he's I feel like he's a better performer than he shows in this movie. But it's weird because, you know, he's third billed, but he doesn't show up until like over an hour into the movie. Like, we don't see him very much. But he does find a way to sort of find that weird combination of explosive temper and sort of complete dismissiveness that a certain kind of, you know, military toady embodies. You know, and the ensemble performances are great, but it's very much it very much belongs to the sort of top three build. But again, like, even with those performances and with the absolute, the stunningly beautiful cinematography, it doesn't fully work. Like, it's trying to condemn the sins of colonialism and point out the contrast between what it means to be led by civilian leadership versus military leadership. And in doing all that, it kind of loses the thread as far as the storytelling is concerned. Like, there's just not the why is very muddled by the pacing and that disconnect. And I understand why they keep things, the Empire is sort of this vague entity. You know, it's intended to be the sort of fictional analog. And it makes sense of storytelling flexibility, but that undefined nature makes it even that much more difficult to sort of connect with the goings-on. Again, the movie's got a lot to recommend it, but that stuff isn't quite enough to elevate it to the sort of capital G greatness that is very obviously its goal. It falls short of those aims. It's a collection of really strong pieces that never fully coalesce into what they're looking for. Basically, it's a pretty good movie that could and probably should have been a good deal better.
All right, there you go. Three movies all broken down by Alan Adams of The Main Edge on Past the Popcorn. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, man.
Are we going to talk with you Wednesday?
I would love to talk to you on Wednesday.
Fabulous. I'll put it right on the calendar, and my 2 days will fly by in anticipation of it.
Same here, man. Can't wait.
Thanks, Al. Alan Adams with us on Downtown.